and understanding that ultimately the keys to Jerusalem were held by God meant that no matter how many times Jerusalem would be conquered, Jerusalem would never lose its hold on Jewish hearts. Jerusalem could be conquered again and again, but the bond would never be broken between the sacred city and those who had vouchsafed the keys of Jerusalem to the Almighty. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 137, Constant Conquests in Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. It was in 1211, as we have discussed, that a group of great rabbis suddenly ascended from Europe to the land of Israel and to Jerusalem. This aliyah transformed the sacred city back into a center of Torah and Jewish scholarship. One might have logically assumed that the future was bright for Judaism in Jerusalem. Yet half a century later, when Rabbi Moses ben Nachman, known as Nachmanides or Ramban, arrived in the sacred city, he did not even find a prayer quorum, a minyan, in the city so beloved to Jews. What had happened? How had this come to be? The answer lies in the dizzying series of successions, conquests, and battles that occurred in Jerusalem over these some 50 years, in which power in the city transferred hands over the decades again and again, which in its own way can be seen as reflecting a Talmudic teaching about Jerusalem. In describing what unfolded over five decades, I will draw on and cite from Simon Sebag Montefiore's History of Jerusalem. Battles of succession followed Saladin's death, but the Sultanate ultimately passed to Safadin, the brother of Saladin, and rule of Jerusalem was given to the son of Safadin, Muazzam, Saladin's nephew. As Montefiore writes, quote, "One of Jerusalem's most prolific builders, Muazzam restored the walls, built seven hulking towers, and converted the crusader structures on the Temple Mount into Muslim shrines." Suddenly, Montefiore continues, in 1218, Muazzam's achievements were thrown into peril when John of Brienne, titular king of Jerusalem, led the Fifth Crusade to attack Egypt. The crusaders besieged the port of Damietta. Safadin, now 74 years old, led out his armies but died when he heard that the chain tower of Damietta had fallen. Muazzam hastened from Jerusalem to Egypt to help his elder brother Kamil, the new sultan of Egypt. But the brothers panicked and twice offered Jerusalem to the crusaders if they would leave Egypt. In the spring of 1219, with the family empire in jeopardy, Muazzam took the heartbreaking decision to destroy all his fortifications in Jerusalem, arguing that if the Franks took it, they would kill everyone there and dominate Syria. Jerusalem was left defenseless and half empty. Her inhabitants fled in droves. And Montefiore adds, yet the crusaders foolishly refused the brothers' offers of Jerusalem, and the crusade itself fell apart. Once the crusaders had departed, Kamil and Muazzam, who had cooperated so well during the ultimate crisis, embarked on a vicious fraternal war for supremacy. Jerusalem did not really recover until the 19th century. Fabled before and afterwards for her walls, she was to be without them for three centuries. End quote. The crusaders may have failed to seize the opportunity to take Jerusalem, but as Montefiore further describes, there was a brief moment of Christian control that followed. In 1225, the ruler of the Holy Roman Empire, Frederick II, married the heiress of the dynasty that had ruled Jerusalem during the crusader conquest. And, building on the legacy established by this marriage, he, Frederick, pursued the conquest of the city. Frederick's plan had originally been to work in concert with Muazzam's brother Kamil, but Kamil ultimately took power in Jerusalem after Muazzam's death, and, Montefiore writes, quote, "When the negotiations wavered, Frederick marched his troops down the coast to Jaffa in the footsteps of Richard, threatening Jerusalem. This did the trick, and on 11 February 1229, he achieved the undreamable. In return for 10 years' peace, Kamil ceded Jerusalem and Bethlehem with a corridor to the sea. In Jerusalem, the Muslims kept the Temple Mount with freedom of entry and worship under their Qadi." End quote. Thus again, only 18 years after the great rabbinic aliyah of 1211, an ending came to the Jewish community in Jerusalem once again. Quote, "Frederick remained officially the master of Jerusalem for 10 years. Frederick gave the Tower of David and Royal Palace to the Teutonic Knights. He ordered their master, Hermann of Salza, and Bishop Peter of Winchester to repair the tower, some of this work survives today, and fortify St. Stephen's, today's Damascus Gate. Franks reclaimed, quote-unquote, their churches and had their old possessions restored to them. The Jews were again banned. Without walls," Montefiore continues, "Jerusalem was insecure. Weeks later, the imams of Hebron and Nablus led 15,000 peasants into the city, while the Christians cowered in the tower. Akko sent an army to eject the Muslim invaders, and Jerusalem remained Christian." End quote. Thus, we have constant battles for a city unwalled, and battles occurred again soon. Montefiore continues, quote, In 1238, Sultan Kamil died, throwing the Saladin dynasty into further internecine wars, exacerbated by a new crusade under Count Thibault of Champagne. When the crusaders were defeated, Muazzam's son, Nasir Daoud, galloped into Jerusalem and besieged the Tower of David for 21 days until it fell on 7 December 1239. He then destroyed the new fortifications, and the warring princes of the Saladin family took an oath of peace on the Temple Mount, end quote. Thus, Muslims gained control of the city again. Soon, an army led by the brother of Henry III of England again took Jerusalem, but only very briefly, for soon after, a massive force of Tatars from Central Asia, hired by the Sultan, stormed the city. Montefiore describes the violence that descended. Quote, on 11 July 1244, the Tatar horsemen led by Barka Khan clattered into Jerusalem, fighting and hacking their way through the streets, smashing into the Armenian convent, and murdering the monks and nuns. They destroyed churches and houses, plundering the Holy Sepulchre and setting it on fire. Coming upon the priests as they celebrated Mass, the Tatars beheaded and disemboweled them at the altar, end quote. And as Montefiore adds, no Christian government would exist in Jerusalem from that moment on until the arrival of British troops in 1917. Thus, the Saladin dynasty and its affiliated rulers again retained control of Jerusalem, but only briefly. An army of soldiers known as the Mamluks, led by a man named Baibars, attacked the Sultan's forces in Egypt and killed the Sultan. And as Montefiore writes, quote, there ended the dynasty of Saladin in Egypt, a downfall that condemned Jerusalem, now half deserted, half ruined, to 10 chaotic years, tossed between different warlords and princelings as they fought for power, while a fearsome shadow fell across the Middle East, end quote. And as he further tells us, after the Tartars destroyed the Crusader kingdom left in Akko, the remnant of the Crusader kingdom of Jerusalem was gone too. And, quote, the real Jerusalem only just survived, less a city, more of a senescent village, unwalled and half deserted, raided at will by Mongol horsemen, end quote. This was the Jerusalem in which, as we will discuss tomorrow, Nachmanides arrived, ruled by the Mamluks, a city in which technically Jews were allowed, but in which almost no Jews lived, the potential for a golden age of Judaism in the holy city having utterly disappeared after seeming so possible half a century before. But as we will see tomorrow, for Nachmanides, the fact that no permanent hold or growth by empire or army took place in the Holy Land signified a sign of divine promise of the ultimate Jewish return. And reading of the constant conquests, one is reminded of what was mentioned in our first episode of Jerusalem 365, of the story in the Talmud that Mishacharav Beit HaMikdash Barishona, when the temple was first destroyed, as the flames suffused the sacred structure, the young Kohanim, who had intended to spend their lives ministering in the sacred sanctuary, stood on the temple roof and held the keys of the Heichal, the inner sanctum of the temple, aloft, exclaiming to the Almighty, Hoil v'lo zachinu liyot gizbarin ne'emanim yiyu maftechot mesurot lecha, because we did not have the merit to serve as the custodians of these keys, we give them over to you, God. And a hand emerged from heaven and took the keys from them. As I believe I mentioned then, according to the Talmud, in its civil law, the handing of keys in a real estate transaction is a silent expression of a desire to transfer ownership. One need not draw up a deed, one need not officially tell one, I am giving you the house. The giving of the keys is an action that speaks louder than words, expressing in Hebrew, Lech chazeku knei, go you, take hold and acquire. And so perhaps, I suggested, the meaning of this Talmudic text about the burning of the temple is that at the last moment, as the city was falling for the first time, before the city was conquered by an empire, the Kohanim, the priests, asked the Almighty to acquire Jerusalem to himself so that all other acquisitions of Jerusalem, no matter how real they may have been, would not have a full and lasting effect. And an understanding that ultimately the keys to Jerusalem were held by God meant that no matter how many times Jerusalem would be conquered, Jerusalem would never lose its hold on Jewish hearts. Jerusalem could be conquered again and again, but the bond would never be broken between the sacred city and those who had vouchsafed the keys of Jerusalem to the Almighty. It's with this in mind that Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik explained the usual Ashkenazic expression of consolation at a shiva. May God console you among the mourners for Zion and Jerusalem. What, he asks, is the connection between the mourning for Jerusalem and one who is recently bereaved? The answer, he said, is that Jerusalem was mourned for hundreds and hundreds of years and not forgotten, because Jews believed throughout the centuries that the keys to the consolation of Jerusalem were still in God's hands. And thus Jews said to a mourner at a moment when the pain of the loss was unbearable, that just as Jews believed in consolation in Jerusalem when it seemed impossible, so too they are saying to the mourner, as hard as it may seem right now, consolation will please God one day come. If the loss of Jerusalem did not lead to the end of the Jewish people. It was because Jews believed, we said, that God still truly had the keys, and that the inability of empires to retain control of Jerusalem was a sign of the fact that the keys to Jerusalem were being held by God for the Jewish people. That faith is a source of Jewish endurance, and this faith would be made manifest in the life of Nachmanides, whom we shall discuss tomorrow, one of Jewish history's greatest rabbis, who believed strongly that the land of Israel was waiting for the Jewish return, and who also believed that if faith and loyalty and love was shown to the land and to Jerusalem, then the keys to Eretz Yisrael and to Yerushalayim would ultimately be given back. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.